Live from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, the Total Education Show, the talk shop for teachers, parents, and administrators. Here's your host of the show, Neil Haley, the Total Tutor.
We're back to the Simply G Radio Show on the Simply G Media Network. Again, you can go to simplyg.com to find out more information on G.J. Reynolds, the Playful and Powerful Warrior, and also simplygmedia.com to listen to all the radio shows, celebrities, and all the different things. And G.J., you know what? He keeps getting better and better and bigger guests, and this guy is one of my favorite all-time greats for sure. So, G.J., how are you? And I know you're excited about this interview.
I'm doing fantastic, Neil. Like you keep saying, it keeps getting better and better, and just goes to show how blessed a lives we live. It's an honor and pleasure to introduce our guest today. Before I get into the accolades, it's a true story of perseverance and never giving up. And as Coach Dale Brown has taught me, and I know we've shared on the show many, many times, is you never, ever quit. You always persevere. Sometimes right before it's darkest, dawn is right around the corner. For this gentleman, he persevered. And to give a little bit of a backstory, he came out of college. He was an undrafted quarterback, tried out with Green Bay Packers, and was in the same camp as, the Hall of Fame, Brett Favre and some other great players. Didn't make the team, but he was told by Coach Mariucci that he had the ability. He just needed to get a little more seasoned. He obviously listened to Coach Mariucci, he went on and got picked up. Thanks to his lovely wife Brenda, who helped, was cheering him on. It's a great story of any great man that I've met, they have a great woman, beside them. Obviously I have that with my wife, Alita. She was definitely in his camp. So he went on. And then he had the story of stories that all of us as kids get to dream of. And he made it into the NFL. He became an NFL MVP. He became a Super Bowl MVP. He became a Super Bowl champion. He's won a lot of awards. And one of the things I was looking at, the Walter Payton Man of the Year Award, the Bart Starr Man of the Year Award. I mean, those are given to men of character. So please welcome to the show, Kurt Warner. Thanks a lot for being on the show, Kurt.
You bet. My pleasure. That was a long introduction. I don't deserve that long of an introduction. And by the way, did Steve Mariucci tell you that he said I could play? I think he told me that I couldn't play. So we don't want to give him any leniency whatsoever. That he did cut me. He was the first coach to cut me. So we don't want to give him any slack.
Well, what's funny here is that I know you get to work with him, and you can meet him now. Coach Dale Brown cut me when I was a kid, and cut me, so I still let him know that I said, hey, you cut me. I'm still healing from that, 40 years later.
Exactly.
Here's what he said. Coach says, after cutting you, I realized I'll never cut any good talent ever again.
Promise.
All right. Perfect, Kurt. I know that you're going across the country with this great national education initiative, First and Goal. Can you tell us a little bit about it, Kurt?
I can. Ironically enough, about 10 years ago, middle of my career, I went in for my annual physical, and I found out that I had high cholesterol. And I was shocked, good athlete. Exercised a lot, good diet, and, I couldn't believe it. And so, I was like, okay, I can handle this. I'm an athlete, I'm a man, I can go take care of this myself. Changed my diet a little bit, continued to exercise, came back year after year, continued to have high cholesterol, and finally sat down with a doctor and go, what's going on here? I thought diet and exercise, could lower cholesterol. And they told me, well, in some cases it can, but in most cases there's a hereditary factor to it. And so, as much as I worked at it, I couldn't get it down. Sat down with my doctor, developed a game plan with the diet, the exercise, but also adding a statin to the mix so I could really control this. I didn't want it to get out of hand. You got some heart disease in my family. My dad just had heart surgery. So it was something that I wanted to take care of early. And so this campaign First and Goal. We've designed a website. It's at First and Goal Heart Health. .com, and it's really designed to get people into the game and get people to take control of their heart health. On the website, there's some great, easy steps, achievable steps that everybody can take to really get in the game and get things checked out. The one thing about cholesterol is you can look in the mirror and you go, man, I'm in pretty good shape. I look pretty good. I'm pretty young, but I'm a perfect example that regardless of all that stuff, you can still have high cholesterol, and it can still be something that can cause issues for you in the long term. And so we're just encouraging people to jump on that website and to really get into the game, get checked out. I mean, how much can it hurt to go get your, you know, your cholesterol panel taken and see where you're at, and if there's issues, sit down with your doctor and discuss them.
And, Kurt, GJ, who's not right next to me, but is a tremendous. He's 52 years old, by the way, Kurt, and he really takes his health very seriously. And you're in the best shape of your life, right, GJ? And you see how important it is to get checked out by a doctor to find out, are there things going on with you, right, G? You know, because you never know what could happen.
Yes, and you know, I mean, just to give you a little backstory, Kurt, and I'll keep it short. I'm like your intro. you know, I found I was out of shape. I was one percentage point from being considered obese, and my wife and Coach Dale Brown actually called me out, and you know, so a little over two years ago, I really got serious, and so I've been on this mission of preaching health and then living by example. And I realized, you know, the more, you know, I'm going to realize how people give up at certain ages. And I see, especially around 40, you know, people start thinking, hey, look, my best days are behind me. And I'm saying, hey, my best days are ahead of me now. And I'm 52. And I know you're a few years younger than me. I think you're 10 years younger than me. And, you know, you're in that early 40s range. And, you know, a lot of men think, hey, you know, my best days are behind me. And they just tend to let themselves go. And I say, now's the time to step up. And, you know, one thing I learned in doing some research here, you know, there's 71 million Americans are living with high cholesterol. And a lot of them really don't even know that they're living with high cholesterol. So what are some things that you would recommend? I mean, obviously, you know, you were probably getting tested a lot because you're, you know, playing pro ball. What would you recommend to the average person that to do that, you know, that, you know, what are some of the signs? And if there aren't any of the signs, then, you know, what can some of the steps that they can do?
Yeah, that's an hard thing, is that there aren't any signs. There isn't anything that really tells you that you have high cholesterol. So really the only thing you can do is go in and get tested. And then once you get tested, then you got to sit down with your doctor and come up with a game plan. You know, like I said, some people, diet and exercise can help them get it down. But for a lot of people, that's not the case. And so for me, it was sitting down with my doctor. And, you know, he put me on a statin. I had some issues with my statin. I had some muscle issues, which is pretty common with some statins. And, you know, I kind of thought, well, they're all the same. And so if I'm having muscle issues with this one, I'll have them with all of them. So kind of kept taking it. And then I sat down with my doctor again, and he kind of laid out some different options for me and said that, you know, they're not all the same. And so right now I'm on my third statin. It's the newest one out there. It's called Livelo. And it's actually metabolized a little different to help you avoid some of those drug-drug interactions. And so I'm on that and having a lot of success with that. And that really becomes the key, is that, you know, there's not necessarily one medication for everybody. Different people are going to react different ways. Different people may be taking different kinds of medications or supplements, different parts of their diet that interact with a certain statin. And so that's what becomes important is, once you figure it out, if you do have high cholesterol, you sit down with your doctor, you talk about the options, you talk about the medications you're on, and you set up that game plan like we talked about so you can have that healthy life. Is that I'm the same way. I don't know, maybe my best years are behind me, but in regards to wanting to watch my kids grow up, in regards to being able to run around with my grandkids 20 years from now, 25 years from now, that stuff's important to me. And, you know, I want to take care of things as soon as I possibly can from a health standpoint so that I can do all those things I want to do.
And that's so true. And Kurt, another thing that I was doing is research as well. In part of your initiative is some people get on medications and then they aren't consistent taking them. They think that they're okay, and then that comes back to haunt you in so many ways. If you don't stay on these medications, if it really truly lowers your cholesterol, it doesn't start out, Kurt, that you're going to have great success. You have to just continue to stay the course, it sounds like.
Well, that's it. Or if one doesn't work for you, doesn't mean there's no medication that'll work for you. Or if one gives you side effects, doesn't mean they're all going to. And that becomes a big part of the process with, you know, a lot of different drugs, but including these statins is, you know, again, sitting down with your doctor and saying, hey, here's my issues, you know, and if you stop, you know, let them know, hey, I stopped taking this for this reason, because it's just too important. You know, I mean, heart disease is the biggest killer in our country. And so the sooner you can get on top of it and attack the issue, the better. And this is a great, easy website, again, firstandgoalhearthealth.com, that can really make it easy. The steps easy and tangible for you to just go, hey, okay, call my doctor and set up an appointment, and then you go from there.
Absolutely, GJ. And remember, I was bringing up one of the things you always say, stay the course. And a lot of people don't always follow what the doctor says, and especially when the doctor prescribes medication, GJ, and or any type of prescription to get better and healthy, sometimes people ignore that fact, and that's great that Kurt's educating people like that.
Right. Well, I think, and Kurt sort of alluded in the beginning, you know, he was a pro athlete and he felt like he's in good shape and all, and you know, like, I don't need to be, you know, I don't need to be worried about my cholesterol, because then all of a sudden you're like, hey, I got high cholesterol. I think that's what a lot of men, that they, the ego kicks in, like, hey, you know, I don't need that, or, you know, I'm okay, or, I don't, you know, I'll wait, and then next thing you know, it's too late. So I think this is a great, you know, it's great that you're utilizing your platform, creating that awareness. And, you know, I didn't realize 71 million people, Americans, I mean, that's just 71 million Americans, you know, I don't know how many people worldwide.
Exactly.
And so you're creating that awareness, and you know, just going in and get tested, and it's simple. You don't have to worry about it. And I know, like, a lot of people, a lot of guys I know, they're afraid of the doctor. I'm like, what are you going to be afraid of?
That's exactly it. And I think using my platform and having been an athlete, and if you looked at me, you'd say, well, I'm not that guy. And I think that's part of it, is a lot of us just kind of think, oh, I'm in good shape, so I don't need to worry about it. I don't want to go to the doctor. I want to avoid it. And I'm just encouraging guys just to get out there and get it checked out. I mean, you know, what can it hurt? You know, all it can do is give you peace of mind one way or another that you're handling your stuff.
We're talking to Kurt Warner, NFL MVP, NFL Super Bowl champion MVP, NFL Network. So that's what I wanted to bring up next, Kurt. How have you liked life after football, especially being with the NFL Network? Have you been enjoying that?
I'm loving retirement. You know, the schedule's good. I love my work on the NFL Network. I'm still staying involved with the game, getting to work with some of the young players. But more importantly, I'm getting to watch my kids grow up. I'm getting to spend a lot of time at home. I'm coaching my boys in football, you know, watching their games, seeing my daughters cheer. And that kind of stuff is priceless, especially as much time as I spent on the field and away from my family when I was, you know, chasing my dream. Now it's nice to be young enough to be able to really take part in everything that they're doing and still have and accomplish things that I want to accomplish, challenge myself in TV, be able to speak to different organizations, do things with my charity, do different campaigns like this that I really think can make a difference and can save lives for a lot of people.
Absolutely. And so, GJ, you two definitely have promoting health. GJ has a foundation as well, Kurt. And G, you could speak about that for a second, and then we can learn a little bit about Kurt's.
Well, obviously, we started the Mission G Foundation, and, you know, basically tackling childhood obesity is the main focus, and I'm a former veteran and helping, you know, veterans transition from the military, and that's our core focus. And obviously, we get in partnership with other foundations that, you know, because obviously, you know, we meet great people like yourself, and you got a great cause, you know, hey, if we can help spread the word, we're always willing to do that. So that's something that we do. And you go to missiong.org to learn more about that. Well, yeah, we also have another thing coming. You got seven kids, and I got seven kids, so we got a lot.
Oh, wow.
And
that's awesome.
And Neil's not too far behind.
I got five. Yeah, I have five.
Wow. You don't find that very often. You don't find seven. Man, 12 between you, that's pretty awesome. It makes life pretty fun. It makes it busy, but it makes it fun.
Your household's got to be crazy, Kurt, right?
All the time. But that's what makes it great. I mean, it gives you something to live for, you know, to watch your kids, and so much more fun. I mean, as much as I accomplished on the field, I have more fun and get more enjoyment out of watching my kids compete and do their things than anything I did. And so it's just, I don't know what people would do without having a bunch of kids to chase after and figure out what you're going to do next.
All right. Well, Kurt, I know that we're definitely coming close to running out of time, but where can we find information, first of all, also on your foundation as well, so our listeners can donate and, again, continue to promote First and Goal, all the different places we can find you?
You know, my foundation is just at KurtWarner.org on the internet. You can find out all the different things that we're doing. We got a lot of great programs that we're still running there. And then information on this. And again, I want everybody to jump on this website and just check it out and take the easy steps, the first steps to get into the game. But you can go to firstandgoalhearthealth.com. And there's all kinds of great information there. There's tips there. There's even, a savings card there for those of you that say, well, I'm not going to be able to afford the medication, to help make it more affordable. We just think this is such a huge issue and such an important issue that everybody needs to jump on that website and check it out.
Well, fantastic, Kurt. We'll hope to have you back to give us an update of how things are going with the National Education Initiative and also anything with your foundation or updates with the NFL Network. So I appreciate you calling, and it's great to have another man of faith on the show, and what you're truly doing, a tremendous role model for men of faith, and keep up that great work and keep helping others. So thanks again for calling, Kurt.
You bet, man. Great to talk to both you guys, and keep up what you're doing as well.
All right, God bless. Take care, Kurt. Okay, bye-bye.
Thanks, Kurt.
All right, you're listening to the Simply G Media Network on the Simply G Radio Show, and we'll be back in just a moment. We're back to the Toll Education Celebrity Show on the Toll Education Network. Again, tolltutor.net for more information. Twitter, tolltutor, Neil S. Haley. Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley. Instagram, Total Tutor. And also Pinterest, Neil Haley. And I'm so excited to have another Olympic athlete. And I had Katie Ulander on my show, and it was just an unbelievable interview. And the one person I wanted to have on, because my memories of 2014 in Sochi, my memories really was the event, the skeleton. And it's just because of the great role models for girls and for women, and how they were just great represents of the United States. So I'm so excited to welcome the program Noelle Pikus-Pace, silver medalist from the 2014 Games in Sochi. Noelle, thanks for calling, and it's an honor to have you on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Oh, my gosh. And for our audience who I know so many people know who you are, but give us a little bit of your background, then we're going to go right into specifically enough the experience at Sochi and what's going on with some of your other projects.
Awesome. Yeah, so I started out running track and field when I was in high school, and my track and field came up to me and said, hey, why don't you come up and try bobsledding? You know, I'm from Utah. The 2002 Olympics had just been, you know, they were about ready to take place, and so there was some recruiting being done. So I went up my junior year of high school. I was 15 years old, my first time ever getting in a bobsled. And the following year, my senior year, I switched over to skeleton, and that's just head first on a little cookie sheet looking sled. You run, you jump off your stomach, and you go flying down the side of a mountain at speeds about 90 miles an hour. So I just fell in love with it, and I quickly excelled in the sport. I competed in 2010. I finished fourth. I missed the medal by a tenth of a second, which is really, really hard to do. I came back into 2014 in these last Olympics, and it was just a dream come true to have my husband, my two kids by my side. And we did it. You know, we brought home a silver medal.
Absolutely. And the story of you going up and hugging your husband and the family atmosphere that you put out there, what an unbelievable experience. And you said you never got the chance to watch it yet, but I mean, it was a lasting memory for sure.
Yeah, you know, I don't remember. I remember, like, bits and pieces of doing that. I just remember being so full of emotion and gratitude and pretty much every emotion that I have ever felt was just all wrapped up into one instance. And it was right when I crossed that finish line. And just remembering, you know, it wasn't just about that time that I had. It wasn't just about that that moment. It was about everything, the culmination that all came to that one moment. It was just all the sacrifice, all the time, all the tears, all the, you know, joy was just brought into that one instance. And just, you know, jumped up. I wanted to celebrate with my family. And in that moment, I was also on the other side of the barricade and the other side of the stand hugging my family. And it was just a moment that I'll always remember.
So for the listeners out there, she came out of retirement to do this and to have this opportunity and say, you're not going to stop. And yet had this experience to a lasting memory to spend with your children. What a tremendous experience for sure. But before this, the whole thing leading up to this, I mean, it's definitely a storybook story in so many ways, because think about this, the commercial that Pampers did with you. It was yeah. Tremendous. It's a lasting memory. I have five children of my own, and just to think about looking at their little milestones, what a tremendous thing. So it's kind of explain what you're doing with Pampers.
Yeah, so Pampers and Babies R Us have just been absolutely incredible for myself and my family. We were able to join the team of Pampers, Team P&G, just before the 2010 Olympics. You know, we had a little girl. I had Lacey at that time. She was a year old. And that's just one less headache that we had to worry about while we were at the games and going into the games with diapers and wipes and everything like that. And then coming into these Olympics into 2014, it's been nice to partner up with Babies R Us as well. That's just... it's an incredible store, an incredible company to be able to work with, where they cover all, you know, all sorts of milestones for kids of all ages. So it's definitely been a place where my family and I have been shopping for years and years. So it's just been a perfect partnership, and the way that they support the family and, you know, the Thank You Mom campaign has just been absolutely wonderful.
And so you've really enjoyed the whole process of this campaign, especially the Thank You Mom campaign. Explain a little bit how that goes.
Oh, absolutely. It just shows, you know, how much our moms have done for us. As Olympians, we know that we've never been able to get to where we're at alone. It always starts somewhere. It started with my mom. For me, it started, you know, when I was 15 years old. I couldn't drive myself up to go train. So she would take time off work, and she would, I just remember day after day after day, her driving me up to practice and waiting in the freezing cold weather. We'd go afterwards, after every single time, we'd go and get like a little hot cup of cocoa or some hot chili or something. And those are just memories that I cherish, and I have my mom and my dad to thank for the opportunity to be able to become an Olympian and to be able to have the success that I've had.
And that's so important, to thank your family and thank who got you where you are today, and to look at those
exactly.
Milestones and think about the commercial, and just, I'm sure it brought so many tears to so many people. That commercial. It was so well done. And
it's just the truth, you know? Yeah, it's pure honesty. It's great.
It was so cute looking at you growing up in different areas. So when the commercial got to air, you got to see it before you headed out to Sochi, correct? The commercial?
Yeah, I saw it. They've done so many different commercials with different athletes, and I was able to see a handful of those before I headed out. And every time I've ever seen any of their commercials, as I'm sure have brought tears to many of your eyes, I was bawling when I saw it. So it was great.
Absolutely. So getting back, when you finally arrived home, it's been crazy, hasn't it? I mean, absolutely just a tremendous what more well-known you are after this and with the commercial and then the silver medal. So take us back after, you know, winning the silver medal and then heading home, and how many weeks you've been home so far and how crazy it's been for sure, but great for sure as well.
It's been a whirlwind, to say the least, and just the support that we have had and the love that we've been shown throughout the years, and then obviously after coming home, has just been so incredible. We got home and our whole community had the whole street, the whole city lined up with, you know, the USA flags, and they were all over our yard, and we had probably, I don't know how many hundreds, if not a thousand people at a homecoming for us, just waiting to cheer for us and give us hugs and show their support. And then since then, I've just had the opportunity to go speak to a lot of different youth groups and companies, which is something I've always wanted to do, is motivational speaking. And now I'm writing a book. You know, it's about the lessons that I've learned along my Olympic career. And I really want to target women and youth and the girls, you know, so hopefully I can help to just make a difference for a positive difference in somebody's life out there. And you know, just, we're just all trying to make this world a better place.
So getting to speak to these groups coming home, it's just, I'm sure it's absolutely awesome. You're Olympian before, but to be a silver medalist and people remember you from television, and I'm sure these little girls and girls have a lot of questions for you, right? About the experience.
Yeah, they do, and it's been so much fun. Yeah, it's been so much fun just to be able to see them. And, you know, after the 2010 Olympics, when I finished fourth, not many people knew who I was. And I'd go to speak to people and say, yeah, I finished fourth. And honestly, in my mind, I just always thought that I would have to tell people that, yep, I finished fourth. Yeah, oh, man, darn it. You know, and then my husband talked me into coming back out of retirement. He built my sled, which was an incredible feat. And so it really has been a family affair. And we were able to raise the money to allow us to travel the world together for these past 2 years, which allowed us to have this opportunity to, you know, earn this medal. And now when we see people, it's not, oh, yeah, I finished fourth. It's, wow, we saw that, you know. And I think people understand, because this is the truth from my heart. It really didn't matter if I won a gold or a bronze. It really wouldn't have mattered. I wouldn't have reacted any different. It was just the culmination of everything that it took to get there. That's what made it worth it, and that's why I reacted the way I did after I won that medal. And so now to be able to walk down the streets and people say, "Wow, you're Noelle, aren't you? Oh, my daughter, you know, she wants to meet you," or something like that. I hope that I can just be that positive role model that, you know, that I hope to be. I hope I can be all that I expect myself to be and make a positive difference in this world.
And when you're talking about how you're really trying to definitely help empower youth, especially girls, I think that it's tremendous to watch, especially in the Winter Olympics, the women athletes and how tremendous role models you guys are. Especially, I was talking to a former Olympian U.S. hockey player woman, and where she was talking about women's sports and where it's going. You're now getting to really get that opportunity to truly give back through that silver medal to tell girls, you too can be in the Olympics. You too can do whatever you want to do. And now you have that platform to speak and tell people that, which is tremendous.
Yep, exactly. Thank you.
So the projects now pretty much coming up, or the two campaigns you're still working with Pampers and also Babies R Us, but what's going on specifically is you're just writing a book and...
writing a book and motivational speaking, and then my minutes are filled in with just small requests, you know, come speak here, come speak there, sign this, do that. And then obviously I'm a mom first and foremost, so I want to make sure I dedicate my time to my kids and my family first and foremost. So that's really where I'm at right now, and I'm just loving life. I'm enjoying it. I'm excited for this book to come out. It should be coming out in the fall. So hopefully, you know, I guess we'll just see what happens from there. But I really am doing what I enjoy doing and what I love to do and what I've always hoped to do.
Well, you'll have to come on my Author's Corner show to talk about that book as well. I have the most amazing authors on my show, so we could talk about your entire story. But where can we find
that? It'd be great.
We definitely will stay in touch via Twitter and all the different things. But where can our listeners find out more information on you, Noelle, and learn more about you?
You can go to NoellePikusPace.com, or you can also follow me on Facebook and Twitter. Twitter is at NoellePikusPace, and Facebook, just search for Noelle Pikus Pace. It's pretty simple.
Well, Noelle, thanks again for taking the time again, because I know your busy schedule, so you were able to fit me in, and I enjoyed hearing about the story, and again, our listeners out there picturing that story and saying how cool it is to listen to you and your excitement, for sure, and I know that you're going to be doing some amazing things, and use this platform to really transform society, and you see that as a mother who's an athlete. You too can be a mom and an athlete in one. Just like I've had other athletes on that are moms, it still does not mean you can't be a superstar, world-class athlete like yourself. So thanks again for calling, Noelle, and we'll definitely stay in touch, and we'll have you back on when your book is out. So thanks again for calling.
Thank you so much. Have a great day.
You too. Take care. You're listening to the Total Education Celebrity Show on the Total Education Network, and we'll be back in just a moment. We're back to the Simply G radio show on the Simply G Media Network. You can go to simplyg.com to find out information on G.J. Reynolds, the Playful and Powerful Warrior, and the Simply G Media Network, simplygmedia.com, to listen to all the great celebrity interviews and author interviews and much, much more. And I'm so excited to welcome the program my co-host, G.J. Reynolds, the founder of Simply G Media. G.J., how are you? And I know you're really excited about our guest today, especially... You know, it's only been a month since the Winter Olympics, and we have a really big guest.
Right. Well, obviously, I love the Olympics, love any type of sport, and I love the amount of, you know, effort that goes into being a top, you know, world-class athlete. And obviously, you know, I train like I'm a world-class athlete, and I'm far from it. So I definitely have a major... I don't know what the word is. I'm very, you know, very happy to see when somebody puts in that amount of work, because I know what the amount of work I put in, and they put in a lot more work, a lot more hours than I do to have the success that they have. And today's guest, she just came from the, you know, representing the U.S. Olympic team there in Russia. And, you know, we'll hear a little bit about her story, but she's a U.S. Olympic skeleton racer. She's a 2012 world champion. She's a two-time World Cup champion, three-time Winter Olympian, and Summer Olympic 2016 hopeful, so we'll hear a little bit about that. She also spent part of her childhood, grew up in Northwest Kansas, and, you know, obviously I'm a Kansas boy, Louisiana boy, and so anytime someone from my home state on the show, I'm very excited. So please welcome to the show Katie Ewan. How are you doing, Katie?
Good. Thanks for having me, guys.
We're excited to talk to you, Katie. And I tell you, looking at your background, especially I was watching the Winter Olympics and I was cheering for you. And you were just so close. I'm sure you wish that there was a couple of seconds. You were a couple seconds faster, right? That was probably a great experience, but also it was disappointing as well, the outcome, right?
It was disappointing. And I wouldn't have needed a couple seconds. I would have settled for 0.04 of a second.
Yeah.
But I am really proud of my performance. I never gave up. I was really thrown off after my third run. I thought that run I'd laid it down and for sure I was going to be in third position. And when I saw number four there, I was kind of worried. I knew that maybe I had made the wrong equipment choice. And I just really had to dig deep and not think about what I couldn't control. You know, I couldn't change my runners between heats, so which are the steels underneath our sleds, just for those of you that don't know. And I just figured I'd go throw down and see what happens. And I think that mentality made it all worth it.
Well, absolutely. And what you were able to do, Katie, in so many ways. I mean, fourth place, but you did, you really represented your country really well. You were received very well at the event, wouldn't you agree? And the coverage of you and everything. And I'm sure that it really gives you that motivation to be a U.S. Olympic athlete, right? It just gives you that to continue to be motivated to keep on training and everything from the response you got from your fans and everything in Sochi, wouldn't you agree?
I cannot believe the reception I've gotten once I came home. Being in Russia, I really didn't know. But when I got home, I couldn't believe the amount of kids that came up to me and just the letters and the messages. I'm still trying to get through my messages on Facebook. And what I keep trying to tell the kids is, you know, they or anyone, they tell me I'm inspiring to them. And I let them know that that's that's the motivation in being an Olympian, is to inspire and educate people that they can just put everything they have into whatever they do, and they'll create opportunities for themselves. And that in turn inspires me to know that my efforts aren't in vain. You know, I definitely have some self-satisfaction in being successful and getting to compete in the Olympics, but there's nothing like seeing a kid run up to you and be all inspired to conquer their dreams.
Absolutely, Katie. And GJ, you experienced that with your Foundation Mission G when you were in D.C. Isn't that true, G? You saw a lot of that, that same type of response with the kids when you were interacting with them, right, G?
Well, yeah, I recently came from an event in Washington, D.C., and spent a lot of time with kids, and just to see, and, you know, this is just sort of a funny story, because I was actually wearing the same jacket that you were wearing and all the Olympians were wearing, and everybody thought I was an Olympian. I said, well, first of all, thanks for thinking I'm an Olympian, because I'm 52 years young. And if you think I can be in the Olympics at any sport in the Winter Olympics, God bless you. But, you know, to come up and to see that they were all inspired and say, hey, you know, you're an Olympian. And, you know, I was I'm not an Olympian. And so, you know, a couple of things here in your story, you know, what you were sharing is, you know, obviously, you know, 0.04 seconds defined, you know, one place, and, you know, then you can second guess everything, what you could have done differently. And I liked how you said how you handled that. And then also being off in another country, not really understanding, you know, how that's been received, you know, back home. And I'm thinking as, like, you're one of four people in the entire world, one of four people. So that's pretty amazing right there. And how many people didn't make the Olympics or, you know, sought out to be an Olympian, just to be in the Olympics. And you've been able to do it, you know, multiple times. And so that's, I think, a great feat and definitely an honor. And I definitely think, you know, your story and what our show is about is really a lot of times about people who've had struggles and turn those struggles into something that are very inspiring and inspiring to others. And obviously you see that, and that's part of what this show's about. And so I love to hear those stories. And you know, and what's good about what, you know, we'll talk more about your story is that you're even looking at doing a different sport in the Summer Olympics. And, you know, so that's pretty inspiring just to see somebody that was in the Winter Olympics doing all the work that you've done to put into being a world-class skeleton racer to now being a weightlifter. So why don't you tell us a little bit about what you're planning on doing and what you're training on for the 2016 Olympics.
Well, I was approached a few times about trying Olympic weightlifting, which consists of the snatch, which is a lift that goes straight from the floor overhead, and then the clean and jerk, which you take from the floor to shoulder height, and then from there you do the jerk to take it overhead. And I kind of ruled it out because I remember a weightlifter came up to me and said, hey, you should do weightlifting. And I was like, you know, well, how often are you guys in the weight room? And she said, 6 days a week, twice a day. And I was like, no way, man. I was like, I like going outside. So I don't think it was till after I lost my father and I had a huge failure at my performance at the Vancouver 2010 Games that I decided to do it, and it kind of gave me a renewed sense of purpose, you know, just something else to focus on. And it pushed me mentally to limits I didn't even know I had, which I think is a lot of the reason why I'm still doing it. It's a sport that really requires you to dig deep and never stop believing. The minute you have any hesitation or doubt, you'll lose the weight or you won't be able to stand up. There's so much mental power that goes into Olympic lifting. It kind of relates to anything you do in life. So I think it's a great sport to help translate the mentality I had at the line in the 2014 Olympics.
Definitely, Katie, and when I'm hearing about, you know, trying to be the Olympic athlete in both sports and different things, and you're saying weightlifting and all these different things, your training game plan's a little different as well, being in Kansas, right? Tell us a little bit about that. That's an interesting things that you're going to use in your training for the weightlifting competition that maybe not all the athletes that are going to be in the summer games would train like, correct?
Yeah, if I'm going to continue doing skeleton this year, I'm going to have to incorporate sprint sessions. Also, being out in Kansas, I'm working the farm, so I really have to be motivated to manage my time well. And anyone that's been involved with the agriculture world knows that it's all about, you know, managing your time the best way possible. So, like, I'm beginning to get up at 5 in the morning and starting to work out. I'm at work from 9 until sundown. And if I can get a few hours in the afternoon, I try to go lift. And then, you know, it's just a matter of being motivated to chase your dreams. You know, I have this saying, I was like, are you strong enough to chase your dreams? Because it's something that is not easy. You can easily have doubt creep in. You can come up with excuses. But if you're really motivated to get something done, there's always a way.
Definitely there's a way, and especially working all day and then training all day and growing up in a farm. And GJ, again, you grew up in Kansas, and that's the surprise is the world travel that GJ is. But growing up, G, you had some interesting outdoor experiences too, didn't you?
Well, my dad, he's a commercial beekeeper, so, you know, that's all part of the agriculture community, and, you know, it's very much in line with farming, and obviously it's dependent on farms. So I definitely see that. But, you know, Katie, you talked about, you know, having doubt and question that. And, you know, that's one thing that I think happens to a lot of people. My wife and I were talking about this earlier with, you know, some people that we work with and how doubt can creep in and how it's so easy to have one little bit of doubt, and how that little bit of doubt can create so much negative impact. And then, but also having that positive, you know, thought can also turn into positive actions. And it's just so it's just a fine line. And obviously in your sport, you know, 0.04 seconds, you know, it can be the difference of winning or losing. And it's just amazing. But, you know, having that doubt. So what have been some of the things that you've been able to do when you've had that doubt, which I think everybody has doubt at certain times. When you've had that doubt in whatever you're doing, how have you been able to rise above that?
Well, I would just have to refer to my most recent competition, the Olympic Games. Before the first night, I was having quite a bit of doubt, actually. I had a concussion the whole season, and I hadn't had some very good performances for this year. So I was starting to freak out. Like, I've only had 14 runs on my sled where I could see because I lost my vision from the concussion. And I called Peekaboo Streak, who is an Olympic champion for downhill ski racing. And she basically told me something really simple, and it's that between then and until I finished the race, there was no room for BS in my head. Meaning there's no room for me to think about anything that didn't matter. Whether or not I had done enough, whether or not I was prepared, whether or not I had the right runners on, I had already made those choices and done what I had decided to do up to that point. The only thing left to do was to go to the line and lay it out. And she reminded me that I'm a fighter, and I'm going to go to the line and fight with everything I have. Who cares if it's not enough or if I could have done something different? There's no point in second-guessing yourself once you're there. The only thing you can do is throw down what you have. And once you're finished, you can go back and debrief. You can think, okay, what could I have done differently? That doesn't mean second-guess yourself. It means what could you have done differently to make the right decisions or prepare yourself to make the right decisions. There's no point in second-guessing, but there is a point in learning. So I guess that's what I do. I once I get to a certain point, that's it. It's go time.
Yeah, I like that. I like that. And I could see why you have a lot of fans, Katie, because you're really inspiring in so many ways. And it's definitely learning from your experiences. And as GJ talks about, the tough times leads us to becoming stronger as people and being able to help others through those hard times and to inspire. So, Katie, I know you have a couple different projects you'd like to speak about, especially coming up very, very soon with the Kansas Farm Bureau and then also Ag Chat. So tell us a little too of those things that are coming up.
Well, I have been lucky enough to fall in love with the agriculture community. I did not really understand what it was all about. I don't know what DJ's experience is with bees, but every person I've met in the farming ranching industry has been amazing. It taught me a lot about community, working hard, ethics, and to be honest, I have learned a lot more about current events, politics, the economy. This is the people that are far more educated and supportive of each other than I ever imagined. And I'm going to the Kansas Farm Bureau conference to learn even more. I feel like there's so much more from this community I could learn, and also to share my experiences as an Olympian.
That's fantastic, and that'll be on March 29th and 30th. And then also, you're going to be a guest speaker, Ag Chat. Tell us a little bit about that.
It's basically the same thing. Young farmers and ranchers, it's just a great opportunity for people to get together on a social media basis and meet each other live and get to find out different things that can help evolve the community. I think that's the thing that's key to anyone who's successful in what they do, and I think why farmers and ranchers are so awesome. They are constantly trying to find a more efficient way to do things and a more evolved way of doing things, which is really important, especially if we're going to have an increased population in a few years. Farmers are very important and key to the survival of our economy, to feeding the world, and understanding what the best way is to do that. You know, there's a lot of talk with the GMOs and if they're good or if they're bad. And a lot of people think that farmers aren't caring about that, but they are searching for the best way possible to feed a nation and feed the world. And I'm really interested to see what we come up with, because I think they're the best people the world has to offer.
Wow, GJ, I tell you, another great guest for sure, and she's very inspiring, and she's also has a platform to speak about and really trying to look at how important it is to get that word out. Isn't that true, G?
Yes, and I always applaud every celebrity, whether an athlete or, you know, whatever their celebrity status is, when they realize they have a platform and, you know, they've been elevated to a platform and they step on that platform. And they're stepping on the platform to invoke positive change. And obviously, you're doing that. You got a very unique and inspiring personal story. And I don't know if you're in the process of writing a book, but I definitely encourage you to write a book and tell your story. And because I know it has impact with, you know, all types of people, whether they're young kids or from the Midwest and farming communities, or even someone like myself. You know, I read a lot of biographies, and I love to hear an inspiring story, because, you know, that inspires me to go and invoke positive change as well. So I encourage you to do that. I also feel in my spirit you're going to do well in 2016 in the Olympics, and, you know, just keep plugging away. And, you know, we'd love to have you on our show again and, you know, to give us an update what's happening in your life and on the platform that you're in. And so, you know, you got some new friends. We'll follow you on Twitter and Facebook, and you know, let us know how we can help you. So where can everyone find more information about you?
Well, my Twitter is KDU11, and there's a link on there to my fan page, which is my name. So I would love to have followers and keep you guys updated. I'm really excited to learn more about agriculture and everything that's going on there. So
all right. Well, best of luck, Katie. I'm really excited about what you're doing, and you're definitely speaking on some great things. And best of luck in the training, and you got to update us on what's going on with 2016. So we'll have to kind of tweet you out at times and say, so what's going on with you, Katie? So thanks again for calling. I appreciate it.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
All right. Take care. You're listening to the Simply G Radio Show on the Simply G Media Network, and we'll be back in just a moment. We're back to the Author's Corner on the Toll Education Network. Again, tolltutor.net for more information. Twitter, Toll Tutor, Neil S. Haley. Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley. Instagram, Total Tutor. And I guess also Pinterest. And I'm so excited of the College Basketball Hall of Fame. I'm just so excited to welcome the program. Kenny Sailors. Kenny, thanks for calling on the show. I'm excited to talk to you today.
Okay.
All right, perfect. And I also want to welcome the program, the co-author of the book, Lou Friedman. Lou, thanks for calling.
Well, glad. Thanks for having us.
Well, we're excited to talk to both of you, and I guess the best way to look at this is I'm gonna first have a question for Lou first, and then I'm gonna go back to Kenny with specifics of the background that Lou's able to bring in this. Because Lou, remember we talked about before, you've authored many different books, but this must have been a very interesting one, especially with somebody who was the creator of the jump shot, almost really. So this must have been a really awesome project for you, wasn't it, Lou?
Well, this really was, and it really was a personal favorite of mine, because back when Kenny and I both lived in Alaska, we first got to know each other there in 1988, when he was a coach of a girls' high school basketball team, and I was the sports editor of the Anchorage Daily News. And that's the first time I met Kenny, was to do a story about him in the newspaper. And we've became friends since then, have known each other for the last 25 years. So I always knew there was a good basketball story out there, combined with a hunting story, given Kenny's background, that I hoped one day would become a good book.
So, Kenny.
Oh, I was. You bet.
And yeah, absolutely, Kenny. And Kenny, the jump shot. Tell us the story of when you decided to try the jump shot. What was the reason?
Well, the story back of that is my brother, out on the farm that we lived on back at Hillsdale, Wyoming. We're out of town about 6-8 miles. And we had this hoop. My brother put it up. He's 5 years older than me and 6'5", and I was about 5'6" or 7", long in there. And we'd go out there and shoot on that old hoop out on the windmill. And I couldn't even come close to covering him because he was a good athlete. He played for the local team, and they even was good enough there in that little town of Hillsdale, went to the state tournament 1 year. So he was pretty good, but he was the whole team for the most part. And I just trying to figure out a way to get a shot over my big brother. And he was having a lot of fun laughing at me. And finally he told me, and I can understand that, he told me that the basketball wasn't my game, that I was just too small. Well, I can see why he believed that. Because in that day, after every basket, you went back to the center and jumped ball. That was the rule. And, of course, everything was built around him, and every play we had was built around him getting that tip at the center jump, and which he did the most of, because he was a good high jumper along with being a good basketball player. Held a high jump record down in that area for, 40 or 50 years. Yeah, and that's how it got started, and I just got to thinking, well, there's only one way that I'm going to get a shot over that big clown, my brother, is jump up above him and shoot the ball. And that's what I did one day, and I don't know what it was like or anything about it, that first shot, but I just know that I shot it and it went in. And he said to me, boy, you know, he said, that'd be a good shot if you could develop it, Kenny. So that's where it all started, right there on the farm down at Hillsdale.
See, that's really amazing, Kenny. And so you had to develop it next, right? This first time you just tried it to make sure you got it over your brother. But then you had to try and practice to perfect it. So what I was saying, Kenny, is it took you a long time to perfect that shot because it was very unorthodox, correct?
I didn't develop that shot just overnight. Right. I even had to work on a few things when I came back after the war. Yeah. So it wasn't overnight that happened, or just a one-time deal. You don't develop a good jump shot in just a few minutes by watching somebody shoot it.
Absolutely. So this question is going to Lou, Kenny. Lou, basically, once he started doing the jump shot, how did people look at him at first when he was doing it?
Well, originally, although it was a unique shot, Kenny always said that nobody discouraged him from taking it all the way through high school, and that his college coach let him alone, too. But, you know, that was not a day where college basketball was on television every day, so few people around the country actually saw it. Kind of the big moment for Kenny and Wyoming and the jump shot was when they got to play in Madison Square Garden, and then it got a tremendous amount of attention from people then. But even then, it was such an innovative shot. There were a lot of coaches, old school coaches, you could say, who were around who just thought the set shot was the way to go, and that if you were leaving your feet, that meant you were a reckless guy. And, you know, they didn't want you jumping. because that meant you couldn't control the ball. Little do they know what the future would hold.
Definitely, for sure. And Kenny, when it started working for you, you said, "Hey, I've come up with something that really is going to help me have a great career in basketball." Correct?
No, not at that time. I didn't. I never gave it a lot of thought. Then, of course, the war was on, or just getting going, and I already had my assignment in the Marine Corps, and I had it for the South Pacific for over two and a half years. But I thought about it over there, but there wasn't too many baskets around to practice on.
Well, you had your first pro, Kenny's first pro coach, did not like the idea of him shooting a jump shot and really tried to kept him on the bench. By the time Kenny was in the NBA in those first years of the league that nobody would recognize today, he knew that was his shot. And then if a coach wasn't going to let him do it, he wasn't going to be able to play for that coach.
That was back in 1946, Lou. 1946.
Oh, wow. And
yeah, I played with – it was with Cleveland and the old Dutch Steiner. He's a good old boy, but he just had a whole different conception of the game of basketball in the years that he played it.
Kenny, how many players started to emulate you, copy your move once you started being able to do it in the NBA? Were there any other people that were prominent that started doing the jump shot once you did it?
Well, there was other people starting to shoot it. There's a few. One player I remember from New York, the New York Knicks. Forget his name right now. He came. Do you remember his name? Bud Palmer. He said, "Yeah, Lou, Bill just told me." Bud Palmer came into the league, and he was shooting my jump shot. It was a good one. And he continued to shoot it all through his time in the NBA. I don't know, of course, around over the country who was copying. Of course, TV wasn't really going strong then, but I'm sure there was plenty of them. And they're like, Bill has letters from different people telling you about us. And trying to shoot the jump shot and just couldn't develop it.
Now,
Kenny's never claimed that he actually invented the jump shot, but it's pretty well conceded by basketball experts that he shot the jump shot in the closest form to what we know now as the routine jump shot, that he's the one who developed that part of it first. Kenny never pretends that he was the first, because there was no way of truly knowing that he was the first one to ever take one. It's more like he shot the one that we all see, you know, going straight up in the air and releasing it.
The old coach from DePaul, Lou, he's the one that said that publicly, that I
Ray Meyer.
Ray Meyer. That I shot the shot that was being used today, right?
So I'm going to say it, and Lou, that's great in that way, that you, Kenny, really, they looked at that jump shot as the jump shot. So I'm going to have Lou describe it for a second. Now, Lou, from interviewing Kenny and looking at these things, so that jump shot that he did really was much different than any other players have ever seen it, right? It probably changed the way the game was played, for sure.
It is. That is the jump shot that developed into the one we see by everybody taking the jump shot today. There were other guys around who took these kind of off-balance jumpers where they were falling fadeaways and falling backwards. And I've seen photographs of Kenny playing, I think it was in Madison Square Garden, where he's the only guy in the air on the whole court. The other nine people are rooted to the ground. You know, they're playing defense. They're trying to cover them. Everybody else is flat-footed, and Kenny's up in the air a couple feet. And Kenny's 93 years old now, and he says his vertical leap is not what it used to be. But back then, it was a couple of feet.
Oh, wow. Is that true, Kenny?
Kenny, you can't jump 2 feet off the ground now, can you?
Well, I get off about 2 inches, yeah.
Yeah, there you go. That's your new vertical leap measurement.
Well, there again, Ray Meyer's the one that come out publicly, and we have a newspaper article on that, and said that maybe it was 36 inches.
Wow.
Okay.
That vertical jump. That's pretty high, but, you know, when you go on the run like I did out of the dribble and then jump, I had to make some corrections on that when I came back after the war to keep from getting called for the offensive foul, moving into my defensive player. But you can get up pretty high. I don't know if you could stand still and then jump 2 feet in the air, but that's what Ray Meyer said anyway.
Well, also, that's what the College Basketball Hall of Fame in Kansas City said in 2012 when Kenny was inducted. Kenny was the most valuable player of the 1943 NCAA championships when Wyoming won their title, but he was an All-American player more than once. But the jump shot also was something that was cited as Kenny was looked at as a pioneer by the Hall of Fame. When he was inducted in a ceremony in November 2012, and they put a gold medal around his neck there like he'd won it at the Olympics. What'd you do with that gold medal, Kenny? Where's it hiding?
Oh, the university's got that.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, Kenny, what advice would you give young players today, especially playing in college, the right way to shoot the jump shot, especially when you see so many guys missing that shot all the time, shooting it too much sometimes? What is your thought, Kenny?
I talk with parents all the time, especially talking about young people starting to shoot a jump shot. Stay close to the basket. Get up within 2 or 3 feet of the basket when you start out. Don't go back to the